for the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last
time.
A celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Come from nowhere.
Alex Rance.
He's never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Cotchin. Left foot snap. The goal of the game.
Trent Zimmer and Brendan Gale deserve all the credit. They've built something fantastic and we just got to keep riding away.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
I'm Andy.
Woo!
Nick, you might recall in the preview show that I said something that Dangerfield, Stagerfield...
Oh my God! Oh, sorry, he just flew past.
That one day he couldn't always be crap against us.
Oh, there he goes again!
But, you know, one day he's going to play well against us, and look... And I'd just like to extend that, but, well, I was wrong. Yes, he can continue to play terribly against us. But, Nick, one day Dustin Martin won't be best on ground in a grand final. One day he won't get that game face on that you know that you're not. That there's no way Richmond's losing this game. You know, one day Dustin Martin won't come out of the phone booth wearing his Superman, Super Dusty uniform. But last night was not that day.
No, not today, Satan. What could have been more perfectly symbolic that for, I mean, choosing between Dusty's goals is like choosing between your children, but the fourth, you know, the perfect symmetry of him reading the play so well as to steal the handball off the Geelong player, which is a skill.
Stanley. It hurt that, yeah, that hurt slightly because you're stealing it off the big lumbering ruckman. So
he'd missed the uncontested mark.
Yes, he was not having a good 5 seconds.
No, he's got really good at that this year, like better than anyone I can think of at doing that. But then for Dangerfield to try and tackle him and be left flailing on the boundary line while Dusty slots yet another incredible game to seal a win that he's in no small part responsible for. It was pretty great.
Yeah, I just read on a chat group. Someone made a very funny call that Dangerfield was like a kid getting spat out off a, you know, those the merry-go-rounds when you know at the playground when it's too fast for them, the kid gets thrown off it. Dangerfield looked like that trying to tackle Dusty. Dusty didn't even need to defend him. He was too strong through the hips. And if you watch the super slow Roma replay, and thanks to Tigers of Old, he tweeted out one that was really good. Like, Dusty, it's just all balance. And Danger has him. Danger has his hands around his hips, and Dusty just turns too quickly for him. He's such an amazing athlete, and he's balanced perfectly on his toes on the boundary line. He's an incredible player. But it wasn't even his best goal. Like, that goal from 60 was incredible.
Oh, it's hard to choose between them. The one from outside 50 was it. That was a great goal. The dexterity of movement on the first goal was great. Like, Oh, what a we are so lucky to be witness to this. It's incredible.
I will say, if you're a neutral, that was an incredible game, and it's incredible when you get the LeBron Jameses and the Michael Jordans is the people who the athletes who shine brightest in the biggest moments. They're special. They're a bit different. Lee Matthews said today, Dustin Martin is the only player I don't get insulted when he's compared to me. by the way, that is such a power move in itself. That sentence.
To be fair, when you look at his statistics, is quite a reasonable position.
But what's funny is that Dusty hardly ever lets out his real personality, but just the video of him, which I love, singing the song while on Tom Lynch's shoulders. If you watch, like, his shoulders are back, his chest puffed out, and he's carrying the cup, like, this is my effing cup, I effing want it. And it's just, it's the rare moments where he individualizes, and, he's just, God, he's an incredible person.
If one of the fantastic creative people on the that does, you know, non-licensed Tiger memorabilia wanted to do a t-shirt that was a montage of Dusty jumper tugging moments in the three grand finals.
In some ways, I was thinking this run sort of almost started the moment he shook Tom Stewart in the third quarter in the 17 Cats final. Like that, it's almost. That's when the moment when Richmond emerged. It's been nothing but incredible since.
Mm. We have talked often about the extent, how much do you credit, the mindfulness and the connection versus having really super outstandingly talented players. Maybe the answer is that they need each other, and it's impossible to isolate them, because it does. Dusty somehow seems immune to the pressure of the moment, and whatever it is he's doing at the moment, it's enabling him to produce his very best in the biggest moments.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he is. For someone who's quite a shy and socially nervous person in real life, he has incredible Zen ability and confidence to focus in football games. And he has a gear, right? Like, you can always, like, I like to joke about it, but during the game, there were multiple times where Dusty actually moved a considerable amount of distance to make a defensive effort. I thought, yep, that's finals, Dusty. Yeah, anyway, it was just a virtuoso. But what in our preview, Nick, we nailed the Norm Smith betting preview. We pointed out Dusty was good value. We suggested Short wasn't a bad one. And Nank had, there was a small chance that Dank would have won it.
And a dash of Shane Edwards as well. Yeah, it was pretty solid.
It was until Dusty's two goals in the last. Like, there was a case, and Cheddar didn't have a great last quarter, I don't think. There was a definite case that Cheds was going to win the Norm Smith.
Mm. I was thinking, two more things thinking about Dusty.
Just two?
Well, I'm sure.
Keep going.
I'm sure we've got many, but just the look. I know we as Richmond fans haven't seen the best of Dangerfield, but when Grimes goes to Dangerfield, I don't feel worried about that matchup. And Geelong have all Australian level defenders as well, and I don't feel like they can stop Dusty. And the evidence says that's the case. Whereas our all Australian defender. Isn't dominated by the matchup.
Yeah, and look, there is a good argument that Danger just doesn't play well forward against good teams. Like, a lot of his goals are against bad teams, but that's for every forward's like that. Nick, and look, this would have been a hard loss. If we can just go to sort of the bigger picture, is I was so a good mutual friend of ours invited me over to his place for the game, but I said no, I can't go because I'm, you know, I'll be a nervous wreck, and I'll be interested to hear how nervous you were, and I was worried that I was going to sweat, you know, if bad free kick winners or something, you know, my language might get a bit colourful. And I can tell you, Nick, the things I said about Dangerfield after he knocked out Vossie in a clear double movement, while the commentators crapped on about Ablett, like he was literally a saint martyr. And look, just to be clear, like, Gary Ablett Jr. had an amazing career, but in 2020, Nick Vostone is far more important to us than Gary Ablett Jr. was. Like, Nick Vostone being down was the bigger story. I get why they made it. You know, he's one of the old timers. But like, I was so angry about that. And then Danger getting the good bloke treatment. He clearly lines up. He cocks his arm. Like, he knew that contact was coming. There were other ways he could have dealt with it, and he cocked his arm and he drove it into Vossie. I was so angry. Stagerfield or Floggerfield were some of the least family friendly things that I called him for the rest of the night.
Now I'm gonna. I'm not certain that that it's still the case, but Patrick Dangerfield's Wikipedia page at I think this was about 2 o'clock in the morning last night. Let's see if I can. Quote for it. Oh, no, here we... This is, actually, it's Nick Vlosten's. Nick Vlosten, professional AFL footballer, three-time premiership player with the club, despite getting leveled during the 2020 grand final in the first 5 minutes by a man nicknamed the Flagless Flog, Patrick Dangerfield.
Oh, yes, nicknamed by that Twitter, that Wikipedia person. But, yes, Well, his 13 touches, you know, they were 12 touches, my apologies, Nick, just like to repeat that he had 12 touches. He had 4 touches in the second half, Nick, you know, in a captain's effort, bravely steadying the ship with his one possession in the third quarter when Richmond were coming back. So, you know, what a champion, what a hero of the game, and what a witty guy in the press conferences. So, you know, nothing but love and respect there. And Nick, I was also very worried in the infinite discussion of Gary Ablett Jr.'s injuries. Will this injury affect his ability to like homophobic tweets on social media? I mean, I just think the commentators didn't focus enough on his injury. No. By the way, on Gary Ablett Jr., you know, like, he had one really nice.
While you're on the roll, Andy, while you're on the roll. Yeah,
guess how many pressure racks he had, Nick? And, you know, I know he had a bad shoulder, but we have some experience of forwards playing with bad shoulders in key finals and still managing to put on pressure. I'm not saying he wasn't brave, but guess how many pressure racks he had, Nick? On the Herald Sun scale, which is the highest scale.
Not many from your tone.
8.
Yeah, that's not many.
If a Richmond player had 8 pressure racks in a game, he would be delisted.
Well... Sometimes the key backs and the key forwards, because their marking contests don't show up as pressure.
Key forwards and key backs. But if you're a small forward, a key in 2020, in fact since 2016, if you're not pressuring, like, what you do with a football is nice, but if you're not pressuring the other team and you're a small forward, it's a liability.
It's non-negotiable. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway. He had a great career. We wish him all the best, but the turning into us, I can't stand the identification of him.
I have, much to my chagrin, mellowed a bit on Chris Scott, when, at least partly when I saw how much respect he and Dimmer had for each other at the start of the game.
I saw that too. That was nice, actually.
Yeah. But when he, in his press conference bemoaning the opportunities they didn't have, I did think, as you said, like, we were down. So Vossie, top 5 in our best and fairest last year in a premiership team, probably top 5 there about again this year exactly 5 minutes on the ground. So all the rotations for the rest of the day disrupted. You know, whereas Ablett, you know, while clearly impaired, was able to be on the ground, so they could run normal rotations pretty much right up until the last quarter when Simpson was knocked out with like 6 minutes to go. So yeah, I mean, it's such a grand finals are like this. Like Hooley could barely walk during the after game presentations.
So we've got 13 minutes. It's such an amazing game. And, like, Hooley was one of the absolute heroes of this game. Apparently, I can't wait to hear it, but Comrade Marshall's interviewed Hooley this morning, and it will be in a feature article. But apparently the calf was really bad, apparently. And you watch him, and on the tape, he's running so hard. But Dimmer said some things to Hooley to get him back out there. It's going to be in the article. I won't spoil the article, but it made the hair stand on the back of my neck. I'm just, what a champion, what a hero Basher Hooley is. And you know, he's almost won two Norm Smiths, but that was his best performance, because we were stuffed if he didn't go back out, because you can't lose two small backs. But he played 80% gay time with one functioning calf, and he, God, that would have done a lot of damage to him too, because that calf damage does, I think it does get hurt more if you keep playing on it. So, incredible. I'm just going to note, Nick, that we didn't put Nathan Broad through the concussion protocol.
No, but I don't think he had a knock to the head. I think he had a knock to the shoulder.
Okay, so sure.
I wondered about that as well, but I had another look at the incident, and I thought he was sort of, his shoulder was hanging a bit funny when he was coming off. So, yeah. Oh, like they are pretty disciplined on that. Well, and that there's severe penalties for that stuff.
Exactly. I'm sure you're exactly right. And shame on me for suggesting that, that because it was the grand final, we had a slightly, and we had already down one defender, we changed our policy. Nank was exactly as advertised.
Yep. We even in the depths, you are asking about how I was. At three quarter time, I told Freya, Freya was at a barbecue with some friends, one of whom's a doctor, and I asked her to have the doctor on standby in case I have a heart attack in the last quarter. That's how good I was going.
But Nick, you know, like, remember in the old days of the WWF, there was the heavyweight title and there was the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
The Intercontinental, the informal one in Richmond, is the Pressure Act King. And Jack Graham has been walking around with that shiny gold belt around his waist for basically 2 years. And Nank's just top rope suplexed Graham, because Nank's was the leading pressure player again for two big finals. And you could just see it. Like, I mean, he gave away a few free kicks, but I mean, he was scary in the center square. He was running people down.
And you just knew he was going to grind down Stanley.
Which he totally did. Like, and the first couple of center square contests in the fourth quarter, Nack gets hit outs to advantage. Do you reckon, Nick, when a Geelong player or opposition players are running along and they know Nank's chasing them, they can hear the Jaws thing?
Yeah.
Because they know in a second if they get slightly slow or they pause for a second, it's all going to go black.
Yeah. Yeah. What a huge effort. Like, the sheer work rate of his performance over the finals is like, the medical staff just did a great job, like, to get all of those guys who missed a lot of football, and all four of them played well last night. You know, we said you can tell when Prestia's really up and about, because he's just popping up in the forward line because he's outworked his opponent and kicking goals, and he did that twice. Shane Edwards,
that goal in the fourth, was probably the most important goal of the game, if you sort of in the context of the game.
Dusty's in the second quarter was.
Dusty's in the third too was pretty amazing. But yeah, that Prestia goal was just huge. And as you say, it was just him running hard. There was nothing special about it. It was a pretty good shot. God, imagine if we'd lost, we'd be seeing that Shane Edwards missed goal kick in our nightmares for years to come at the end of the third quarter, because that was the moment. That's when we'd broken them.
I know. And that would have been such a Richmond goal if we'd
kicked it. Absolutely.
How did you find the occasion as a whole? I mean, obviously, not being there, you know, I got to say, was a massive kick in the guts during the day. I really didn't cope with it particularly well, but I think I got over it.
I got a bit emotional when they played up there because I went to the empty MCG. Actually, I walked around MCG and Punt Road today, as you know, because I sent you the photos, and there were a lot of people out. It was just nice to talk to a few Tiger people and say, go Tigers, as you walk past someone. But yeah, you could actually see into the MCG. Some of the gates you can, at the Punt Road end, you can actually see the goalposts and see the green through the windows. Footy needs to come back. But look.
Yeah,
it would have hurt a lot more if we hadn't been to two grand finals.
That's true. Absolutely correct. Look, I thought they did a very good job of embracing how it was different. Like, it was honestly a pain having the kids stay up and be super hyped. The aesthetics of it being at night probably helped with the pre-match entertainment. Enjoyed Wolf Mother. And the surf lifesavers and stuff. Like, the kitschy stuff, they went with it, and I think it worked. But I also, that the Gabba has two tiers instead of three. Like, it just doesn't. It doesn't feel like a Coliseum.
But look! Thank God there was a crowd there, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Because it makes such a difference. But yeah, there was a moment. And this was sent to me by a Queenslander friend. But when the Pitch Invaders came on, that someone said, and this is why Queensland can't have nice things.
That's perfect.
But yeah, look. It was good, like, you know, it was. And, like, it's been nice because I was able to, you know, been video chatting during games with a couple of guys, and we've done it all season, and they're also able to have their family there and, you know, in the room. So, like, and it was what it was. But sometimes, you know, going to the game, all the time you spend walking or the pub, you sort of you get distracted by things. It's not, you know, there are upsides to it, too, I guess what I'm saying. Also, I was able to drink much better wine than I've ever had at the at the London or at the All Nations.
I think we have talked too long without raving about Jaden Short's game.
700 metres gain. Sorry, 771. Wow, I mean, what an incredible game. Like, legit chance of could have been the and magnificent tackle on it was Bicklaps, wasn't it?
Blitzards,
Blitzards, yeah, sorry, different game. Blitzards, and I just loved that. I think someone was watching and said, oh, let him up. Like, they were thinking Blitzards was hammering into Jaden Short, but I think Shorty was giving it to Blitzards on the ground.
Oh, bless.
Nick, sorry to just distract, but there was a at the end of the third quarter. I'm not sure if you saw this, but the Richmond players were pumping. Noah Boulder's an elite celebrator, and now the Geelong players were all hunched over, breathing hard, and like it was a one goal game, and the Richmond players were celebrating on the top of their feet. Like, it was the body language doctor. When Jaden Short is if alpha maling Blitzars, like you know you're on.
I know. No, Bolter does the double fist pump, which, owing to his, you know, ridiculously well developed set of guns, is extremely impressive. But yeah, if you adjust for game time, Short's meters gained was within striking distance of the all-time record. Right, that was a monstrous, monstrous game of football.
Also, lots of pressure racks for small back,
and led the team for intercepts in Vlossy's absence. Like that was a huge performance.
A mutual friend of ours has suggested that was Pickett's best game. I don't think it was, because Pickett's had a 20 possession goal game. But he just gets, and it was in the second quarter when we were in deep trouble. He wasn't great. He fumbled. He made a few bad decisions, but he was the one trying. Like he really sort of stuck his foot in the dirt, and he was just giving it all. Did you notice the slow mo? They had a beautiful slow motion replay of him just putting a beautiful hit on Danger side on. And it was such beautiful football violence. It wasn't no big deal, but it was just another hard hit. And, you know, a lesser, less coordinated person would have gone high or, you know, all sorts of things. But, yeah, he's very, very good at the physical side of football. He's not a great player, but he's a very solid contributor on this team because he's very, very good at the hard aspects of footy.
I know. Both our wingmans just did yeoman's work. Like, as you said, Pickett, particularly in the first half, yeah, the work rate and the physicality and Camden McIntosh with another one of those beautiful goals and that we used K-Mac such that Blitzarves couldn't relentlessly leak off him into the back line. Now, they often had Tom Stewart as a spare man instead, but yeah, it was both of them played well. And then as has been mentioned, like for the two guys in K-Mac and Graham who missed last year to come back into the team, right? It's gotta be pretty sweet for those guys.
Oh yeah, incredible. Like, and do you think Josh Caddy took a little bit of spleet pleasure in the elite trash talking that Tommy Lynch was demonstrating?
I had that thought as well, that Tommy's really, really taken up the mantle in Caddy's absence.
Yeah, it's incredible. I just go back onto Gary Ablett. Nick Vostone had the same amount of pressure acts as Gary Ablett. Ooh,
yeah. Speaking of...
More premiership medals too, by the way.
Speaking of Caddy, for somebody who must have felt really disappointed, like he seemed to be holding nothing back in the celebrations.
No, and look, yeah, like it's pretty special, right? He's an interesting one. We won't talk about it now, but he's an interesting one. What you do with him at the end of the year. Nick, is there anyone else you want to talk about?
Oh, the many, many, many. Although, and when talking about celebrating, I also want to shout out Biggie Nguyen, who proved that while he's got a very good burst over the first 20 metres, he's no 100 metre runner.
Yeah, look. If I was to like pick a dark spot from the day, I think his lack of kick in the last 25 metres of the grand final sprint. Look, frankly, I was disappointed. I think it was an un-Richmond-like effort. I'm glad they chose him.
I thought he showed some outstanding areas in the celebrations.
Yeah, look. Tommy Lynch is underrated. A good, like, he was there. He was the one holding Dusty up. Like, you know, like, yeah. Dusty's king of the world. Like, you got to sort of, to be the platform from Dusty makes very good sense. But also him, the video today of Jack Rumalt, who's singing along and then just casually pulls the Premiership Cup and drinks from it. But while on a golf course, driving the golf cart around, like, that was, it was Tom Lynch in both cases has been the straight man, but played the straight man very well. Like, I think Tom Lynch just brings a lot to this club, aside from his handsome locks that fall across his face and makes age riders fall in love with him. He also
age riders.
Yes.
I don't think you need to go too so narrow there.
Yeah, indeed. Seriously though, one guy who did not have a great game was Rioli. Just on the replay, he just was not feeling it.
No, and yet he comes up on all the running stats as as having worked really hard, but absolutely nothing was happening for him offensively. And it was the same for George in the first half as well. Like
but in the third quarter, like I was joking at the time, but like about a 10-minute stretch in that third quarter was almost like clear out the forward 50, just leave George 1-1. He was feeling it. Like his goal was slightly lucky, but the way it sort of skidded off his boot and no Geelong player got to it. Then, you know, if he just clunked that mark in the goal square, he would have had two goals in the third quarter. He would have been a match winner. I'm bouncing around a bit here, but the inside 50 count in the fourth quarter was 17-8. I mean, what an all-time capitulation in the biggest football moment of your life.
I know. When it was big boy time. It's funny this didn't occur to me at the time because I was far too reptile brain during the game, but just how much it was a repeat of the preliminary final. But this time it wasn't Tom Lynch leading the way, but you know, we just found other, like, it was almost other than Dusty, you'd say that Jack Lynch, Rioli, Castagna all struggled for periods of the game. You know, Lambert was good, maybe not great, but yeah, they kept working relentlessly throughout.
And it is remarkable, we just go, you know, when we were up in the fourth quarter, we just looked so creative, and the third quarter, we just looked so creative. Like, you know, that Bolton shimmy that he did on the way to the long kick that Lynch marked for his first goal, first and only goal. Like, that was just incredible, the way he stopped and then re-accelerated and he didn't get caught. Like, the Geelong player couldn't handle his change in speed. It actually reminded me a bit of Harden, the NBA player, that he just, his incredible ability just to decelerate and then accelerate again, just completely throw up the opposition. Bolton is an incredible athlete.
Oh, yeah, I thought he had a, you know, when talking about the forwards who struggled, I didn't mention him because he was, you know, he'd twice had intercept marks. The one that led to Lambert's goal, the one that led to Lynch's goal. He was the best player on the ground in the third quarter, according to AFL ratings. He had 7 tackles. What a game of football. For a guy who was far from a sure thing when he came into the AFL, I thought it was an immense performance.
Oh, completely. He's such an important player, and so nice that we could get Shedder with these 9 clearances. We won the clearances, by the way, Nick. Incredibly, we won the tackles by 22, despite actually having more possessions in the end. It's not, and by the expected shots metric, our score is basically the same, but Geelong is no surprise. They kicked quite a few long shots. They would have kicked a goal less on average normally. So, look, we didn't pump them, but we thoroughly beat them. And like to do that while also having one of your most important wet weather players, like, that's an incredibly big loss, Vossie. And then if I'd said to you, Nick, Vossie goes down like that and Hooley's badly done his calf, what you definitely would have said made Geelong favourites, right?
Oh, well, I had, which is very much evidence of how deep some of these scars run. I flash back to the elimination final versus Carlton, where we lost Reece Conker in the first quarter and we were down a midfield rotation for the whole day. Yeah. I just thought, that is just going to hurt in ways that people don't notice. Huge.
To his credit, he did, in between the sycophantic ranting about Ablett, Hodge did point this out, that our back line, like, there were moments in the second our back line looked completely discombobulated. Like, there was actually a moment where they didn't get up from the play was still going, but they were too exhausted, and Geelong kicked another goal. Like, the body language was awful. It was funny. Dylan Grimes said that at halftime, he said, look, things look good. We're not, just keep going. We're doing it. Was funny that Dylan could see, because I guess he watches the team so well and understands it, that the systems were working. And well, Dylan was right.
Yeah, I mean, that bit about being discombobulated, I thought, twice in the second quarter, it was Broad kicking under pressure, when maybe that would have been Vlossy, and Broad turned the ball over when Vlossy wouldn't. Although, when you say about the defence looking discombobulated, I thought Liam Baker looked really good all night.
Well, he always does. I love him.
But a wet, slippery ball. Other far more high profile, well credentialed players fumbling it. He was hard and clean, and yeah, great effort.
Yeah. It was funny that, have you watched him? If you watched him as presser, he talks a lot about, he said how he'd been a bit of a grumpy.
Yeah.
Quite grumpy early on.
Which really is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. As someone who's a manager in a COVID affected area, I could completely relate to that not wanting to project your own grumpiness onto other people. That was really interesting, but it also was really exciting. Nick, got slightly bit of bad news. We've just had a run in, because it wouldn't be a grand final podcast unless we had an Ollie Noonan run in. And so I can just see him, he's joined online.
Gentlemen, how are we?
Hey, Ollie.
Ollie, how are you going? We're live on the podcast. We're recording right now. How are you feeling?
I saw it said recording, so I'll put my swear filter on just for you boys for 15 or so minutes.
Very good. How are you feeling, mate?
I'm a washed up old man. Tell you what, winning these flags takes it out of you. The hangover hit quite hard this morning, even being stuck inside.
Are you as washed up, though, as Gary Ablett is?
not quite. I'm just as bald, but not as washed up.
Yeah.
I was just saying to Nick, it is quite impressive. Gary Ablett had the same amount of pressure acts as Nick Boston on the game.
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to enjoy this. This is a good rough and quiet.
Yeah. There's been a fair bit of both Ablett and Dangerfield shade already.
Good. I like my Geelong supporting wife. She's taken Henry for a walk. So they're out of the house, because I'm like, you're probably not going to want to hear the things I'm about to say.
Yeah.
Well, so have you sent a care package to Dangerfield's home address in Geelong?
Well, unlike crazy Geelong supporters, us Richmond people don't go finding out where players live and attacking their homes.
How bad are, in the context of having won a grand final? Flossie's had a terrible day.
Yeah. Oh, and I found out about that at quarter time. I didn't know what happened. There was the footage of him, like, unconscious on the ground, and then they're just like, yeah, Foster's house got firebombed. What psychos.
Yeah, incredible.
So, Ollie, we've had an argument about which of the Dusty goals is your favourite.
Oh, I've got quite a, not scandalous, but probably a contrarian take. Mine's the Czechside, I sound like BT, but the dribbler Czechside from about 50, 55 metres. That's my favourite.
That was my favourite too.
That was Andy's. I was the fourth quarter one because he left Dangerfield flailing on the ground before he kicked it.
Yeah, I really hope like someone like what's his name, Michael Wilson or whoever's taken a photo of that. Like there's a really, really famous photo of Messi scoring a goal and Ronaldo in the background with his head on his hand, just like devastated. I really hope there's some footage of Dusty just as he's snapping that, of Danger just laying on the ground, just looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was the ultimate, just the whole Dusty's, I was saying to Nick, the video of, you know, Dusty celebrating on Lynch's shoulders, you can see that's the moment where, you know, he hardly ever shows up where, but you can see all his body language is holding the Premiership Cup. This is mine. I did this. I own it. It's so nice. Like, just occasionally you see his massive alpha male side, but, what an incredible game.
And if you guys are lucky, I'll let you hold it for a little bit, but then I'm going to need it. I'm going to need it right. Let's be honest, this is mine, and you guys can just have a line with it every now and then.
Yeah, let's be honest, if I switch teams, they probably win.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like LeBron, essentially. Like, he's just plugging and play. Like, he's just... Actually, my wife, Melanie, last night said that when Geelong were missing those goals, she was just like, oh, no, this is... You've probably spoken about this, forgive me if you have, but she's like, this is prelim all over again. She was not enjoying it. Instead of being... whatever, 22 points up and happy, she was like, we should be 32 points up, not 22. And then Dusty, he's just inevitable.
Yeah.
In fairness, Geelong actually scored more than their expected shots because they kicked so many. They did kick a lot of outside 50 shots.
Yeah, that was annoying. I was doing my head
in. I know. It was pretty frustrating. Yeah.
Like, Dave kicking that set shot, what are the odds? Surely. Like, he's a horrible set shot. He just flushes it from nearly, like, 45 out on an angle.
I know. Although, speaking of beautifully flushed set shots, I reckon Jack was all of us after he kicked that goal in the last quarter and lost his mind. Like,
even he was, I think it was half shock too, wasn't it, that he nailed that? Like, he hasn't kicked a goal like that cleanly all year, and he saves it for, you know, clean up time in the grand final just to rub salt into the wound.
I actually called it before he kicked it that he was going to kick it. It was such a Jack thing to kick that goal. I don't think he's kicked a goal that well since the 2019 grand final where it went through the middle and I punched it as it entered the crowd. So, you know.
That was your last connection. It was like Jack of old. You know how he used to, like, now you get a bit dicey. Like, remember it really, really early on where he didn't make the distance in the draw against Collingwood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and if look at that compared to now, like, it's just, that was just beautiful.
I think one of my favourite Jack moments is that shot for goal that went for a point against Port Adelaide.
He did the J curve sort of run up just because he knew he had to just score.
Get everything out of his aging hamstrings to get that ball to make the distance. So, but Ollie, I really want to give you the floor to just like express your commiserations towards Geelong because they were such worthy runners-up.
Losing suits them.
Yeah.
It suits them. It looks good on them as an organisation as a whole. I have been, as I mentioned before, personally bullied and abused by Geelong supporters for forever. Essentially, they've had their wood over us ever since I knew what football was about. But, I mean, it is still fun now, regardless of what happens, to say, yes, but you don't beat us when it matters. It's just such, like, a cutting thing to say to someone, and you know it's really, really going to hurt them.
Mm.
Yeah, I must admit, Conrad Marshall's idea, but we just need to beat them in a semi-final next year, and then we can do a box set of all the finals we've beaten Geelong in. We'd have the four of them, and we could have Patrick Dangerfield's sad face on the front of the box of the DVD box set.
Mm. Oh, that was just danger.
Joel Selwood's 5 games ahead in his lead as most losses as a captain in AFL-VFL finals.
I don't think anyone's going to catch him either.
No.
Generally, clubs don't sort of stand for that length of mediocrity, I suppose. Mm. But the captains just seem to really, really enjoy it and just accept it, so that's fine.
Yeah, well, as I said, his one possession in the third quarter was truly an inspirational effort.
Yeah, there when the whips were cracking, their guys wilted and our guys lifted, and you can just sort of see the difference. Like, I know we were talking during the week when everyone was getting all anxious. You just put the two grand finals, you never know what's going to happen, but if you put the two team names next to each other and you just like, you just look, Jed Buse, what? Why are we worried about a team that has Jed Buse in it? Like, you just say some of these names. I know the poor fella got knocked out, but Simpson, no, I'm sorry. He looks like a work experience kid. He shouldn't be playing in the grand final. Like, it, and that sort of came to the forefront once we lifted, which is definitely what I did.
Do you think Chris Scott filed a missing persons report for Gary Rowan after the game?
What was that? Who sent me that stat, one of you two, about his touches in these three grand finals? Did he have 17 touches in across three grand finals or something like that?
I think it's something like that. It was only five with two clangers last night.
And he was put on Grimes to try and like quell him. Like, you know, you're no good as a forward when that's
Adelaide. Like, if Adelaide did that with Andy Otten to Rance, sacrificial lamb.
Ah, Grimes, love him.
Now, Ollie, as a for a team that's, you know, meant to be history's greatest monsters, I actually thought, you know, they let themselves down by being both magnanimous towards Gary Ablett Jr. by giving him a send-off, which I can't remember a winning team doing in a grand final to a player from the losing team. But also the being so extremely family-friendly during the medal presentations. As a recent father yourself, how did you find it all?
I thought it was like annoyingly polite. Like, they just, if you didn't know anything about Richmond, it was your first game you'd watched and you just read the papers in the lead up or whatever, it doesn't match up with the way they're portrayed. Like you said, history's greatest monsters. They would give me the irrits if I supported someone else, because they don't give you a reason to hate them. Like, you just, when they're so good, you just want them to be pricks like Hawthorn used to be. But then, like you said, they turn the music off, they do the parade, they have their families out, they speak glowingly about the other team straight away. I almost want them just to say, like, yeah, Geelong, like, suck it. Like, again, you blew another 4-goal lead in another final for the second year running. Thanks for the flag. See you later. But they're just, like, magnanimous. They're just kind. They're kind of semi-disappointing, to be honest. I will not be teaching Henry to be that.
Yeah, it would be hard to hate. I'm sure people will manage it because people are mean and petty. But, like, when Marlon Pickett's kid runs up with Jack Rimmelt to accept the award because she's slightly confused and, like, because she's obviously, like, she really obviously has developed a relationship with Jack. She's close enough that she thinks that, you know, that's part of the family. She ran up. Like, it's hard not to love this team.
Oh, yeah, that would be annoying. I would want to dislike them, and they're not giving us
no. Pickett's kids wearing the Dreamtime jumper as well.
Everything was just. I mean, I suppose they're used to it now, so they can plan for these grand finals sort of stuff. But they just did everything so well. Even the media after the game, like Edwards, I nearly called him that nickname. He doesn't like Edwards. Was just the way he talked about Gary Ablett and his wife and that sort of stuff. It was just glowing. Like, yeah, kind of disappointing, to be honest. I kind of need a scandal. I need him to drunkenly do something like how they drunk dialed Rory Laird 100 times the night after. The 25th. I need them to do something like that this year.
Well, perhaps, you know, that video of Lynch and Rimmel driving in the golf cart, like perhaps they were driving just in a circle up and down past Chris Scott's room in the Geelong bubble.
What a life, what a contrast from Sicola, Victoria. It's gross, windy and grey here, and they're just half cut at, you know, 11:30 driving around in a golf cart in the sunshine.
To be fair, the day before it was an apocalyptic tropical storm at the same time in Britain.
True. The night grand final, comparing how long it's taken to get to, what is it, 5:30 now, compared to how long it took to get to 5:30 yesterday, ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. It was excruciating.
Yeah.
I did have one comment, though, that I have run. Have you covered Jeremy Cameron going to Geelong yet?
No, we haven't.
No.
So
the floor is yours.
It's sort of, well, yeah, it's just the bonding for them is going to be really, really easy because, you know, it's awkward your first day, like Lynch and Jack. When they would have met, they would have, you know, you got to find a bit of common ground. Whereas now Hawkins, after his performance yesterday, him and Cameron can both bond over doing stuff all in a grand final against Richmond. That can just be their sort of their meeting point, and they can just discuss it.
Yeah, it's gonna break the ice. And speaking of disappointing grand final opponents, I actually got a little bit of Crows Power Ranger stance vibes off Geelong during the
who end. Didn't link arms in the interview, in the anthem, I asked that too.
Would you want to go to Geelong, though, now knowing what happens to teams who lose grand finals against Richmond?
That's true. Look, I think
if you're leading a team that's already capitulated due to a grand final loss, it probably, you know, it's much of a muchness.
Look, and I think we credit Simon Wallace here for this comment, but, you know, look, let's face it, Geelong is a retirement destination now. If you look at their average age, it's like, you know, where AFL players go to retire, and this is Simon Wallace.
It's the flower of the AFL for sure.
Geelong's arthritis was clearly playing up in the wet weather, and it affected their performance later in the game. Like, Jeremy Cameron, he's played some really good footy, and now he just wants to sort of lose some finals in quiet dignity in Geelong.
In front of slightly more people.
Yes.
And I know. Sean Higgins on his way as well, as, you know, as he seeks one last hit for his super scheme.
Is that supposed to help the fact that they're slow and disappear when things get tough, bringing in Sean Higgins?
Yeah, I think they really need another highly skilled cat. But yeah, good for them.
Oh, God. And I've just seen now that Danger didn't get sighted and got completely let off, which is
I was so angry about that.
I was more annoyed no one did anything.
I was impressed that the Brisbane crowd booed him in the fourth quarter.
That was good. It's good to know that Tigers are still Tigers regardless of their postcode.
He's going to get booed next Richmond game at the MCG when we have people too.
Yeah.
And I think he knew, like you could see on his face, he knew what he did and it almost weighed on him. It probably didn't affect his performance that much because, like, he wasn't playing that well anyway. But you could just tell, like, he knew what he did. He'd stuffed up.
Can you imagine if Tom Lynch had done that?
Oh, they'd have shot him on the field. They'd have found a loophole to just have a public execution at half time.
Yep. Gil would have personally pulled the pin on the guillotine to.
The guillotine. He would have had it branded with his face on it and everything. He would have loved it.
Yep. I love that he was taking selfies in the crowd after the game. Thanks, Gil.
Yeah, they're halfway through saying thanks to the AFL and the Queensland government, and Gilson's looking at his phone, not even paying attention.
We've been talking for quite a long time without talking about second rucks, which I think is a sign of how little sleep that Andy's had.
Yeah, look, it was an issue because, like, all the worry and thought we put in the preview pod as soon as Vossi went down became irrelevant because it was all hands on deck in the back line. We had 9 hit-outs to advantage in the game and Nank had 8 of them. We had 27 hit-outs and Nank had 25 of them.
I thought Bolter had some nice moments as second ruck, though.
Oh, yeah, totally. He was extremely competent in it, as he almost always is, and he was good with the second efforts. There was actually a moment, you might remember, where he'd won a centre clearance, and he was streaking towards goal, and he deferred to Dusty and hand-passed to him, so Dusty could kick instead. And I was like, no, you're actually better kick now. But it was just like, you know, you've got to defer to the goat.
He has to. I mean, you just there's a hierarchy, and it's clear. Dusty's at the top of it.
Yeah, but was there anything more? Yeah. So like, and that was the story. Tom Hawke did give us trouble. He had at least one absolutely devastating forward line ruck contest. But
he has to be, like, if not one of, like, the strongest bloke in the AFL. He is ridiculous, the way he moves people in the ruck.
He wrecked old Nank.
Enormous people like Nank, he throws them around like he's throwing me around. It's ridiculous how strong he is.
Yeah.
Normally like
Hawkins. Yeah, it's annoying because I actually quite like Hawkins these days.
Yes, and it drives me. I don't want to like him, but I do. It annoys me.
Yeah. And both the key for the full forwards on both teams are ridiculously good looking.
I'm pretty happy that Hawkins is 33 years old next year, so we hopefully don't have to put up with him for all that much longer.
Nah, but look, they're going to be good and ancient and still competitive next year. And look, they'll probably beat us in the regular season before we flip them in a final again.
And that's what I've said a few times now, kind of talking about the regular season, that hopefully by now, if Richmond lose a random game to bloody Fremantle in round 6 next year, can everyone just calm down? Because that will be the third unit. Like when we lost to, what was it, Hawthorn, everyone went, and then St Kilda, everyone went crazy, despite the fact that the year before we'd had very similar losses and then build. It was quite clearly shown that we don't prioritise round 5 like some clubs. We are prioritising peaking at the end of the year. So hopefully people have learned their lesson.
2018 is the only year we've spent a significant amount of time on top of the ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we have been lucky that it's not a coincidence, but for our three flag years, we've got healthy at the right end of the year.
I think, yeah, but there's obviously surely some planning in that as well, like the load management that sort of they were put into it. They're not having people peak, you know, for a game against.
Yeah, and it's not like you've had good injury like in a grand final when two of your key small backs get injured in the same in the first quarter of the game. Like that's much worse. It's much worse having an injury in the game than having an injury before the game.
Absolutely, like that philosophy, and you guys have no doubt covered heaps of that. Didn't that just through everything? That the cascading like ripple effect of that when all of a sudden your second best defender's now on, you know, their best medium-sized forward, like it just goes on and on and on, and that then through the ruck everywhere. I can't believe they recovered.
That was the most impressive grand final by far.
I know.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
And the thought...
The other side didn't wilt.
No. They'd on the AFL Stats Insider has a game winning probability tracker, and they were at 88% in the second quarter.
Wow, that's good. I'm using that. I'm actually going to send a message about that after this.
And that probably didn't even count the injury, did it, Nick? It probably doesn't.
Probably no.
It would just be score and time left or something like that.
Exactly.
Like
that. Yeah.
Score and time. Yeah. And the thought of, you know, obviously, COVID willing, of having two premiership flags that we need to unveil at the MCG, like, phew.
Can we do them in like back to back weeks? So if we get Carlton and Collingwood first up again, we can piss off our two biggest two biggest other clubs. Like just that'd be perfect. I want to see Eddie's face as Richmond have to unfurl their second flag.
No, we can't stand it. Start the game yet. No, we've got another one. There's another one.
Sorry, you guys are ready. There's another one.
By the way, just a breaking news: Marlon Pickett's staying at Richmond.
Oh, good times.
Really?
I'd heard there was genuine chance of him leaving. Oh, that's...
Oh, I'd heard that he was gone. In fairness, he's in the perfect football circumstances. Like, end of career, he's got a role because he sort of, you know, those role... Some role players can expand on less good teams, but I don't think Marlon actually has... I don't think he's good enough for the ball to really become a top 10 player.
No, but you look at like Conker has been genuinely useful for Freo, and you need good role players to help set the tone for rebuilding teams. And if anyone's going to need family around to help with raising kids, you'd think the guy with four kids.
That's got to be an absolute tick for the clubs. Abilities to support their players that he's done that. Like he,
yeah.
If he decided to leave, you would just be like, good on you, mate. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, four kids away from their family in Western Australia, or the extended family in Western Australia that can help babysit. Yeah, it's a big load, but
so the club's ability to support the Indigenous players now, like that is, you know, from the dark days of not knowing that Jared O'Connor had dyslexia and couldn't read until he went to a different club, from now, like the show of faith from someone like this, that's awesome. That's great to hear.
Mm. Yep. Oh, well, and you know, it's just like no one wants a premiership player to leave. Now, the big one is Nathan Broad, of course.
Yeah. Well, will this be? You'd assume he's going to go because what is it? No premiership 22 has ever played together again.
No.
So I thought Pickett of everyone. I thought Pickett would be the one to potentially mess with that. Now, yeah, probably Broad. You're right.
Mm.
By the way, how good was that mark your biggest, he took retention back with the flight of the ball over Rowan in a key moment? Like, that was such a big kahuna's mark.
He just doesn't make he's the exact perfect example of know your limitations, and that's what you want in like your third or fourth best defender. He doesn't do like some of the stuff Noah was attempting in the first half, was doing my head in. Like, he doesn't try that sort of stuff because Noah can occasionally pull it off. Brody knows what he can do, and he sticks to that. And that's absolutely what you want because you know what you're going to get. And like you said, Mark was just quintessential Brody. Deasy reads the ball well.
He does. Look, I mean, a lesser player would have punched that through. Because it was the safe thing to do. By the way, Nank's double fisting 40-meter Vups, God damn, he can punch a ball.
And he did one of them across goal, like about 30 meters out, and I was like, "What are you doing? That's the worst." And of course, I'm an idiot. Nank knows what he's doing. He hit it so hard, it was basically like a clearing kick that cleared everyone, just went over the top.
Yep. I mean, there's a clear thing in the back line that they play territory a lot in the back line. A lot of times they're not looking where they're kicking at, but they know they're just trying to create a contest as far away as possible.
And that's like Jaden Short. That's actually one of the things I wrote down for this. Short, he's content. A lot of people don't like turnovers if you're stat conscious. He's quite content with long-range turnovers. Mm. He will look up and see Stewart sitting back there doing the Rance impersonation. And most people look up, oh, no, don't worry about it. He just knows, let's reset. And because he can kick it 70 metres off one step, he just boots it away. It allows everyone time to sort of reset. Whereas he doesn't, you know, a turnover on our forward flank doesn't hurt us. It does on our back flank. So he's really, really good at clearing the ball.
There was a moment I gasped out loud where Dusty won a contested ball on the halfback line and he just thumped it 65 metres and out that kick. I think it was what actually almost led to the Shed's goal, the Shed's missed shot. But it was just like he knew there was no one there, but it was 65 metres and it was a deliberate tumble, just like create the space, set up the pressure, and the pressure arrived. It was just magnificent football. And the contested possession before it was so impressive.
He kicks those. They're not quite like it. He deliberately does it because it means everything he does. It's deliberately not a torpedo because they're super hard to hit in a wet. He hits the ball like in the middle. God knows how he does it. And this awful thing you'd never want to try and mark. And it just goes like a rocket.
He's like his first goal, like his ability, his understanding of where the foot's hitting the football is just like he's definitely the best Richmond player I've ever seen for that.
Yeah, one part of his body is pushing College Asney, who's a big boy, holding him off, and then the ball's sort of bobbling up in the air, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll just throw my foot at this."
Yeah, like, the key defender-sized person. I think the bit where you put the qualifier on the end of the best Richmond player I've ever seen was unnecessary.
Yeah, I think that debate's over now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I've seen a few, couple more people that I might not have seen, but. He's easily the best player I've ever seen.
Mm.
Yeah, but and the most, he's definitely the most skillful kick. Just quietly. And we've been going over an hour, so it's time to wrap this up. But Shea Bolton is like underrated, like one of the most skillful players I've ever seen at Richmond.
Yep, so balanced. He's just so light on his feet. He's never on the balls of his feet in any contest, and you can just see the way his lateral movement. I didn't like him as a bloke, but it looks a lot like Dale Thomas when Dale Thomas was a good player. The way he can move away from a contest laterally is just ridiculous.
I actually made a Harden comparison before.
Perfect example. And especially like Harden does that slow down move that lets people run past him.
Exactly. Yep.
Really good at doing that as well.
And yeah. Sorry.
Oh, and another player for whom like the big stage and the bright lights aren't too much. Like he's that good that he can.
Best games are the bigger game. It seems to be.
Yeah, he just rises to the occasion, and yeah, what a team.
What a club.
I know, but this morning I went back and listened to one of our game recap podcasts from 2016 as a sort of.
What would you do that to yourself?
Just
that is slightly random.
Well, I just so I fully appreciated where we came from. That, you know, we were talking about Steve Morris and Taylor Hunt and Corey Ellis and Sean Hampson, and it was, you know, just slit your wrists and line the bath stuff. It was
not exactly big game players in that list you're going through there, is it?
So, you know, I don't think we do, but we shouldn't take for granted just how incredible this team is.
These are the good old days.
I'm Nick.
Exactly. I'm Andy.
I'm Ollie.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. The only this time.
Shots on goal, and that was his worst. Big Mahan takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon. Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year. Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. At champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals, you can make the case for him being best on ground.
I think they were a better team last year than they are now.